Good morning, my debt-free millionaire zealots. This is Zach Edwards with another episode of the Debt-Free Millionaire Podcast and our personal finance course that we're going to actually give you each day, each business day, I should say. So it's every week we have five lessons that are actually found in the book that we're about to publish, and we're going to give you talking points during that. So while you're studying the book, you can actually read the book. While you're studying the book, you can hear us talk about each of the subjects. So you can read it and you can hear about it, which will allow you to retain it even easier than you would be if you just read it or you just heard about it. Because out of the mouth of two or three witnesses shall every word be established in your head. And this is why the third witness is actually going to be when you start playing the debt-free millionaire game, which is coming up in the next month. You'll be able to beta test it and then final test it afterwards. So it'll be three different places that you're getting it from. One, reading it. One, listening to it. And then the third one, which is the most important, which is the most fun, is the debt-free millionaire game. So stay tuned for that. Today, though, we are talking about savings. Now, what is savings? Savings is putting money away for tomorrow. This is where you're not going to spend this every month or every day. You're going to keep this in the back end to be able to use it when it's needed. And you always want to have a certain amount of savings in case something happens. Some people call it an emergency fund. Some people just call it money to have in the bank for the right opportunity. When it comes to my situation and my belief is a savings account, the main savings account, I should say, is an emergency fund. And this is actually takes about 3 to 6 times what your income is. And the reason why I say this is, or sorry, not your income, your expenses, your monthly expenses. So say you spend $2,000 a month, just giving a round number, then you need at least $12,000. So it's 6 months of $2,000. And that will cover you for, say, if you lost your job. But you want to have at least that 6 month time period in case something comes up. So, for instance, I was in the home building industry. I built homes for Pulte Homes, one of the it was the largest home builder in the nation. And then the 2008 recession came, and it actually shrunk, went back down to Florida and California, and now it's starting to grow a little bit. And other ones have taken over. But I lost that job in 2008. In 2009, I had moved to Utah to start working for another company called Hamlet Homes. And then that one went under, and that one actually went into hibernation. Come to find later on, Pulte Homes, after laying me off, had actually become, had actually left the Denver area, which is where I was. And yeah, so that was a really hard time for me. But because I had some savings, I was able to use my savings, and then I had to get into my credit card. So credit cards, again, it's more of an expense. And if I don't have to get into those credit cards and I can live off my savings, it's even better for me when it comes to being financially free and less stress. But what's interesting is that as of a few years ago, the housing recession happened again. So during that time, a lot of people have been laid off. Well, actually, it's still going on, and it's probably not going to be fixed this year. But because of that, a lot of people have been laid off. And because people have been laid off, they've had to go into their savings. As soon as their savings is gone, they go to their credit cards. Again, we don't want you to go to credit cards. That's why we ask you to have 3 to 6 months, preferably 6 months, to have in savings just in case something happens. This could also be, forget about your job. Maybe it's a very secure job. What about if you got sick? Well, your company will only pay for a certain amount. The government will only pay for a certain amount. But then you have to go into savings. And if you have a 401k, just so you know, you can't go get assistance from the government. They're going to want you to go into your 401k, your retirement, the stuff you're not supposed to touch until 60 years old before you can get help from them. So I was denied when I was working and then got laid off. I was denied any help except for unemployment, which is only for a certain amount of time. But if you know, the recession back in 2008 took 2 years. This recession, it's actually been stretched out. It's not horrible, but it's not good. And so the people that have been let go have been losing their jobs for about the last year and a half to maybe about 3 years. So because of that downsize and that decrease of jobs, All of a sudden, all these people are having to go into their savings, and now the country is actually at the peak of where it's ever been. This is the record high for the amount of credit card debt. So that is why we don't want you to rely on credit cards or even the government, because you don't know if they're going to be there for you. We want you to be reliant on yourself, which is why, again, we ask for 3 to 6 months worth of savings. And usually people put this money in a bank account. Well, I'm going to give you a little bit of history of where those actually came from. And then you'll be able to know exactly how things have developed and where to go in the future. So let me go back to way back in time, back in ancient history, back to the Mesopotamian area. So this is back in before 0 AD. This is probably around the 600 BC. So this is a point where people did not have currencies. Like they had currencies, but that's not what they were savings. Their banks would actually save their grains. It would store their grains or their precious metals, even their weapons. So this was the first type of bank that you could deposit your stuff into. It was only more recent that they started saving money in banks, which had been started up in England in 1799. Then it became the postal service would, yeah, funny enough, the ones that carry your letters around were actually places where you could store your money back in 1861. Then the United States created their first bank, which was called the Provident Institution of Savings in Boston, in 1816. December 13th, 1816 is when they opened these up. Now, if you know much about history, you know that there's a really bad time in history called the Great Depression. This is where a lot of people lost their money. Even people started to die out of hunger and a lot of other things that were happening during that time. So in order to bring more faith to the banking industry, the government actually created what they call the FDIC. The FDIC means the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. This was established in 1934. Now, this was actually in order to guarantee that if you put up to $5,000 in your bank account, it would be saved for the future. So say something happens and the economy tanks. Now, the value of money goes down. There will always be a guaranteed $5,000 per account so that you could always draw out at least $5,000 of your bank account. So if you had $10,000, you could still only pull out $5,000. If you had $300 in the bank account, you could pull $300. You could pull exactly what you had, up to $5,000. Now, this made the banking institutions flourish. And so banks began to store a lot more money. This is where they actually started to introduce the savings interest rate. So the savings interest rate is, say I put in $100, and the interest rate, it started off at 3%. That means every year I would get $3 added to my bank account for just storing $100 in the bank account. Well, that was actually started out in 1957. And then by 1983, it had increased to 5%, which means if you put in $100, you were getting $5 every year back from the bank. Now, you'll understand more why they allow this, because it actually helps the bank and it helps you. So we're going to get back to that later on. But another great benefit that the banks started doing was they wanted to incentivize you to open up bank accounts. So they would actually offer you, and this is actually funny enough, this is actually up until the late 90s, maybe even early 2000s, they stopped doing this, enticing with different things. But they started off with free toasters and free wall clocks. The banks would buy a bunch of these, and then they would give it to you if you opened a savings account. So it was a great benefit for the banks. They were able to take your money and be able to use it, and you were able to get a toaster out of it. And then every month, you get a portion of that 5% or whatever the interest rate was going at the time. So this was a great thing when it comes to getting people to reestablish using banks and being more self-reliant per se. But then the government back in 2021 decided, hey, you know what? And this actually happened a little bit before, you know, let's also loan money at a lower interest rates. Now, the Fed controls the money, so they actually brought it down to a 0% interest rate for the banks to borrow money and give it to normal people. But when they gave it to normal people, they would actually charge them 5%, 10%. So the banks would collect all that extra interest. Now, in 2021, it was at 0.2%, but there's multiple times where they actually went lower than 0.2%. And so this is actually a point where basically people lost interest in savings, putting money in savings. Because when a bank ends up giving you an interest rate for a loan of, say, like 8%, it used to be that they would actually borrow from the depositors and give you a portion of that back. Well, the problem is if all of a sudden they're borrowing from the government and they're getting at 0%, they're like, well, we could put it down to 1%. So you're going to get 1%, that means $1 for every $100 every year for storing your money in the banks. Well, why would I store money in the banks at that time except for my emergency fund? This is all of a sudden where people started getting smarter and started turning to alternative methods. But also, interesting enough, this is also around the time when electronic transfers also started happening and direct deposits started happening. So this is where people would actually be able to control their money over their smartphones. Direct deposit actually happened well before 2021, but electronic transfers really got top of people's minds around 2021 when things like Venmo came in and PayPal, where you could actually transfer money without using a bank, a quote-unquote bank. You could use PayPal or you could use Venmo. The banks didn't like that. So all of a sudden, they're going to start increasing the interest rates just a little bit to get you more interested. But they can't introduce those interest rates unless they're going to increase the loan percentages. So what happens when that happens? So all of a sudden, the federal government is seeing huge inflations, which means, sorry, I'm going off on a little side note. Inflation is basically when the value of your money drops. So I was buying a loaf of bread for a dollar. Then all of a sudden, inflation hits. That all of a sudden, my dollar means less than it did before. So now I have to pay for that one loaf, I have to pay $2. This is basically what happened during actually the last few years under the Biden administration. We all of a sudden started having to pay a ton of money in order for us to be able to get the regular goods that we had before. Now, I did mention Biden, so I got to be fair and balanced. A lot of this actually happened because the federal government was lending out huge amounts of money, trillions of dollars. So I'm going to give you one more history lesson, and this one's really important to understand, especially when it comes to inflation. And this is where the government gets it wrong every single time. Now, let's go back to a man named Mansa Musa. You ever heard of him? Back in Africa. Now, the sad thing about the United States is that we do not teach much of African history, and there's a lot of great lessons that are there. So we should actually focus a lot more on things that are being that were taught and learned in Africa, and I'm going to give you just one example of this. So in Africa, Mansa Musa was one of the wealthiest men in the whole world, even to today's standards. So let's see, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, Bill Gates, pennies on the dollar of what Mansa Musa had. Why? Because he controlled the Mali government. He controlled the civilization of Mali. Now, Mali was one of the biggest markets for gold and other precious metals. And the reason why he was one of the richest is because he was one of the smartest, and he also controlled basically everyone's money. So you could, in his society, there was only certain people that would actually have money. But that's not the point. The point is exactly what he did in order to corner the market on gold. Now, some people say he was so generous, but here's the truth. Okay, so at one point, and I can't give you dates, I cannot remember because this is not something I plan to tell you about, but it's very important for you to understand. At one point, he decides he wants to go to Mecca, his holy land as a Muslim. He goes to Mecca. On the way to Mecca from Mali, he has to travel through Ethiopia and up through Egypt and then up to Mecca. During that travel, he goes to Ethiopia. This is the biggest market when it comes to gold. This is his biggest competitor. huge competitor. Now, with Ethiopia, everyone controlled basically their own money instead of Mali being out where they all controlled basically by the government, controlled most of the money. So he went over with camels and servants covered in gold. And why he did that was very smart. He did economically, very smart thing to do, very cruel to the economy. So basically he went through and he started passing out all this gold to all the poor and all the needy and everybody. And then he went on to Mecca. Now, when he came back and found out that the whole market was completely collapsed. It was completely collapsed because the gold that he introduced to the market, all of a sudden, everyone had all this gold. So the people that are selling a loaf of bread have to buy the materials to get it. And so they're going to pay the farmers. Again, the value of the gold has gone down. So they're going to pay more gold in order to get the grain to make the bread. But even more before that, the people that own the land, the government, were actually selling it for a lot more because the gold was not worth as much. So all of a sudden, they were upping the price. So the landowners, the farmers, had to up their price. So all of a sudden, the bread, the people, the bakers, had to up their price. This is what inflation is. When the value of something, whatever the currency is, drops, the value that you have to pay for any of the essentials or anything that you buy becomes so much more. So let's just take gas, for instance. If you remember like 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, gas was about $5, like everywhere in the country. In California, it was like $7. And this is because all of a sudden, the gas, let's see, trying to put this all together, because it's, again, this is not part of whatever I was going to tell you about. But what happened was gas all of a sudden became more expensive because, and there's a lot of different reasons, but one of the big reasons is the federal government cut off drilling on federal land. So because they did that, all of a sudden the price of gas went up because there was less gas you could get. So all of a sudden, the first thing that Biden did when he came into office, one of the things, is to condemn the Saudi Arabia and a lot of other countries that were oil producers. All of a sudden, what happened? Those people are going to increase the value of, or the price of their oil. This is actually called OPEC. This is like all the countries outside the United States that produce oil and sell it at a reasonably balanced price. So OPEC gets to decide, this is a cartel basically, where they get to decide how much they're going to increase the price. And usually they have to keep it on the market. The market's the one that actually controls what the price is. But if all of a sudden Saudi Arabia decides, well, I'm going to cut our oil in half, then there's less oil to go out there. So the price of oil skyrockets because you have to be able to pay someone to drill it. So because of all these different things that the federal government has done, all of a sudden, our inflation when it comes to gas has skyrocketed. Now, luckily, that's come down a little bit because we've actually started drilling for all the contracts that were made before Biden became president. And these oil contracts have actually started to pump more oil. So we are still producing, even though the federal government has decided we don't want you to pump because they've been pushing for EVs. Now, I understand their thought process. But what happens when you start going for EVs? All of a sudden, the price of gas goes up. This is supply and demand. So if all of a sudden the federal government is going to take away the land for the gas companies to pump, and there's going to be less oil coming in and being put into the markets, all of a sudden, oil becomes more expensive. Now, EVs come in, and what is EVs made out of? Petroleum, which is, oh, well, look at that. Oil. There's still a lot of this happening. But interesting enough, people don't want EVs. I mean, there are a good portion that want EVs, anywhere from 10 to 20% of the United States at least. But the problem is the other 80%, they don't want it. They want cars that consume gas. And why is that? It's because, one, they're cheaper, and two, because it's more readable. Gas is a lot more easy to come by. You can go to a gas station and get it. If you have an EV, you have to plug in, and you can't just get it within like 5 minutes, which is how long it takes you to fill a gas tank. You have to fill up your engine or your battery for the next hour. So people don't want to wait all that time to do it. So the government basically shot themselves in the foot. Our prices of gas skyrocketed, and just recently it's come down a little bit, In 2000, before, let's say before COVID, so 2020, 2019, gas prices were actually around $1 to $2. Now they're between $2 and $3 and even $4. So depending on where you live, we can go into that a little bit more. Actually, I have that later on. But I want to give you an idea of what inflation is, because I want to go back to the banks. So all of a sudden, the companies are not selling that much, but people are still buying a ton. That means if someone buys like a ton of this product and they keep producing that product, and there's a lot of people coming for that product, the price is going to keep going up. That's a little bit of inflation. So when the prices go up for that good, whatever that good is, all of a sudden the feds decide, hey, you know what? People are getting money too easily with their jobs. The price of the pay for the jobs is going up. So we need to be able to increase interest rates. And because like we were talking about, the interest rates were down to zero for the banks to loan. All of a sudden they're like, well, we need to increase this rate. We need to increase the amount of percentage that we get back for money that we lend out to these banks. All of a sudden these banks decide, hey, you know what? We're going to increase our interest rates to the loans, for the loans, whether it's a student loan, a home equity loan, a personal loan, a business loan, a mortgage, all those increased. Well, now that they've increased, the banks can say, well, if I'm not going to be borrowing from the Fed, I can actually start borrowing from the depositors again, and I'm going to increase their interest rate because I want to get more depositors to deposit their money back in there. So now the interest rate has come up to about 3%. This went from zero to 3%. And so that's a fairly good point. And if you want to guarantee to keep your money in a spot, in one spot for like a year, you can get what's called a CD. Now we're going to go over all these different ways of savings, but the banks are using different ways in order for you to be incentivized to put your money back into the banks. But again, like I said, people are becoming more interested in, instead of depositing in the banks, to investing it. And this is what Debt-Free Millionaire is all about, is teaching you about how to invest your money alternatively from the banks. We're going to still use the banks because we want emergency funds. We have money that comes in from your bank, your paycheck, all these different things. Okay, so now that I've gone over a history lesson and give you a little bit of what inflation is and how the banking industry somewhat works, let's go into some vocabulary words. And I'm only going to give this because I want to make sure you understand what these are. So vocabulary words. We have bank. This is an institution or a business. They're all businesses that store your money. And they also lend out money. So this is basically a money changer. These are people that take in money and give out money. Now, when you deposit money, this is money that you have, that you own, and you're depositing it in a bank, which means you're giving them a certain amount of money. The next one is a savings account. A savings account is something that you actually, it's your, like, your file for all your money. It's like your, let's put it this way, it's your vault inside the bank where you store all your money. And the bank has guaranteed it with the help of the federal government. Remember what I said, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC. But now in 2021, they have now guaranteed that they would watch over your money up to $250,000. Here's a problem here. So just last year, there was a bank that was going under, and then all of a sudden there was another bank that was going under, and then there was another bank that was going under. All of a sudden, the federal government said, well, we can't actually guarantee all of these banks, all of these accounts, because the way that they do it is the banks actually lend their money, not just from the depositors to their loanees, their borrowers. They actually started to let other banks borrow their money as well. So the money's going everywhere. So you don't even know where your money is right now. So the FDIC is supposed to guarantee it up to $250,000. Well, these banks that were closing down had all these different accounts that were that needed their money back, and the banks didn't have that money. So the federal government's like, well, we can't bail out all these banks, so we're just gonna pick the ones that we want to guarantee. And so all of a sudden people started freaking out that the federal government was not going to be able to guarantee the insurance that they have on each of these banks. And so there was actually a little bit of a scare there. This is when private companies actually came out and bailed out the banks instead of the federal government, because they did a great job doing this, because actually a lot of the things that had happened was things that they were allowing. Back in 2008, when I lost my job because of the home industry going down, is because they were allowing banks to give out money in not an underhanded exactly, because it was completely transparent, but in a way that was not smart, and they were giving out bad loans. So yeah, again, this is why we want you to be self-reliant and not reliant on the government or not reliant on anyone else except for yourself, maybe family, but that's it. Okay, let's go to withdrawal. Withdrawal is a word that basically means you're taking your money back from the government. You're withdrawing your money. Savings interest rate. We told you about this. This is how much the bank is willing to give you in return for storing your money in the bank. And it's based on a percentage of the money that you put in. So again, if you put in $100 and it's a 5% interest rate, you're getting $5 back every year. But it's going to be given to you every month at a percentage of that 5%. So you're going to get, basically take 5%. So the $5 divided by 12 months, there you go. That's how much they deposit in your bank account each month. The next word is depositor. So you would be the depositor if you're depositing money. Then there's the word borrower. Borrower is someone that actually borrows money or takes money from the bank and is in contract to pay it back. How about lender? That's the bank. The bank is the lender. They're lending out your money or the federal government's money to make sure that you can borrow money and that the depositors can deposit their money and know that it's safe in their bank. The next one is the Fed. This F-E-D, the Fed, is a short way of saying the Federal Reserve Bank. And basically what that is, it is a very centralized set of banks. It's private banks all colluding together with the federal government. Now, it's supposed to be separate, but the president actually gets to choose who the chairman is going to be of the Fed. Ben Bernanke is one. So this is actually the person that will help make the decisions at their board meetings of whether they're going to increase or decrease their interest rates or where to distribute their money. So it's supposed to be, again, a private organization, but we have now basically federalized it. So that's just how the cookie crumbles, right? So let me give you a little bit of clarification just to make sure you understand this point. This is the third time talking about it, but I'm going to talk about it one last way. Hopefully you'll be able to understand, and you're going to see how things have changed just recently when it comes to borrowing. Okay, so you have the depositor right here. You have the borrower right here, and you have the lending institution right here. So the depositor deposits money into the lending institution, the bank. The bank says, okay, I have this borrower over here. I'd like to lend some money. So I'm going to take from the depositor the money that they deposit in, and I'm going to give it to the borrower. Now the borrower decides, I want that money, so I'm going to contract to pay the bank a certain amount of interest on, again, like the savings account interest on the amount I'm borrowing. So say they borrow $100,000 at a 5% interest rate. Well, right now, a 5% interest rate would be great. You're not going to get it right now. So every year, that depositor, the borrower, has to pay back $5,000 to the bank. So 5% of $100,000 is $5,000. And when I'm going to pay back the bank $5,000, that is the interest. And then the bank says, well, you're also going to pay me this amount of principal, which is basically a little portion of that $100,000 that you borrowed, and you're going to pay it back to the bank. So you're like, okay, so I'm going to pay another $1,000 plus the interest rate back to the bank every month. Okay, So you would think that that $1,000 would now mean that you owe $99. Actually, when you see the way that the bank does it, and I'll show you an amortization, that's what they call it, amortization chart, your interest rate is actually a lot more at the beginning, and then it shrinks as you get closer to closing that account. The principal then takes over, so the principal starts very small, and that grows over time. So this is a little bit of underhandedness that you'd think when it comes to clarity and transparency, because most people don't actually understand that. People that are getting loans, they think, well, I'm paying back the interest and I'm paying the principal. But if you want to pay the principal faster, what you have to do is pay the minimum that you're supposed to pay every month and then add on an extra $1,000. So say I have I borrowed $100,000. The larger portion of the amount that I borrowed goes to paying off the interest rate. Now, and this is over 30 years. A mortgage is usually for 30 years, maybe even 15 years, and sometimes 20 years. But it's usually either 15 or 30, most likely, most traditional, it's 30. So you can actually say that in the beginning, say $100 is going to your principal. So now you owe $99,900 to the bank the next month. But if you threw in an extra $1,000 and you told the bank this is going to principal, you write on your check, to principal only, then instead of owing $99,900, that you now owe $98,900. So any money over the minimum, especially if you tell them beforehand, you have to actually write it on the check, or even write them a letter, and you say, I want this to go completed just to principal, not to interest at all, then they are obligated to drop your principal every year for the amount of extra that you spend in, plus whatever comes out of the mortgage, the small amount, and it gets larger over time to pay towards that principal. So again, I'm getting out of this. Okay, so you got the depositor, you got the borrower, and you got the bank institution. So the bank is getting all this interest back from all the borrowers. So they're making a ton of money off of those borrowers. But remember, you also have a depositor's savings account interest rate. So the bank says, well, okay, I'm borrowing for 5% interest. I'm going to give it back to the depositor 2%. So I keep the other 3%. And they need to, because they're running a bank. They're running a business. They have to pay all their overhead and everything. So they're going to pay you as the depositor 2%. You're thinking, hey, this is great. I'm able to get 2% and I'm able to save my money in the bank. And if I put it for longer, I can get more out of CDs and other things. So we'll get into that later on. But now, just recently, the borrower and the depositor have become smarter in this. And now they're creating ways for the borrower to borrow directly to depositors. And there's different ways of doing that, which we'll go over later on. Some of these things are through things like cryptocurrency and blockchain. Some of these are through other institutions, not banks. Now remember, when a depositor gives to the borrower and it's not in a bank, it's not in an FDIC insured bank, there's a possibility you're going to lose your money. So that is a risky situation depending on the institution you give it to. If you give it to cryptocurrency or some sort of blockchain, then it depends on the market of that cryptocurrency. If it goes up, that'd be great. But if it goes down, it's not so great because the value of what you deposit in is not worth as much. But the people that allow the borrowers to borrow it, they're always going to make their money back. So there's new ways where we're becoming decentralized, not depending on the banks, but depending on ourselves. So the banks do not like this. So get ready for some other type of incentive or the government coming out and penalizing these things. So when it comes to cryptocurrency, they're already going after it. There's a lot of different organizations, departments in the government going after cryptocurrencies. There's the banks that are going after cryptocurrencies. Interesting enough, now that cryptocurrencies has started to climb again and interest has continued, instead of falling off, it's not a fad anymore. All of a sudden now the banks are trying to get into the crypto realm. So this will actually be a big boom for the cryptocurrencies and such, because the big banks are now in there and even the federal government is talking about it. Now, I'm going to talk to you briefly about something that's very important. The federal government has decided, has thought of, are experimenting with, and are most likely trying to get what they call the it's digital currency. And I forgot the actual abbreviation for it, but they're actually trying to create their own digital currency. The problem with the federal government is that they could actually, and this is the fear by a lot of people, not just conspiracy theorists, but everyone in inside of government and outside of government, that they could basically tell you by programming into the currency that you can only buy certain things, or you can only buy a certain amount of things, totally taking the control away from you. And this decentralized digital banking system that we're establishing through like cryptocurrency and blockchain, all of a sudden they gain full control over it and they shut down the other currencies. If this happens, there's gonna be a big blow to everyone. Think of it, no more paper currency, which means you can't pay a kid for mowing your lawn. If a kid decides that they're going to start up a lemonade stand, how do you transfer funds for it? Ultimately, it's going to be transferred and the bank can see it. And if the bank can see it, or if not the bank, the government can see it. And if the government can see it, they're going to be taxing you on it. So any kid opening a lemonade stand can basically get ready for being taxed for your lemonade stand or for any making bracelets or making anything. How about someone that's homeless and you want to give some money out? Well, you can't. You can buy them food, but you can't help them to get off the ground, and you can't pay them to do some of these things. The government would have full control over it, which is why there's a lot of people and even a lot of states. I think there's like 20 out of the 50 states that have already written laws that basically say you're not doing a digital currency, we will not accept federal digital currencies. But who ultimately has the power? Yeah, it's the federal government. So how this all turns out, be ready for a firestorm. This is going to be interesting. okay, so that is basically the... Sorry, there's a lot of information there. The book has a lot more streamlined and easier, plainer language, not all this extra stuff. But hopefully this extra stuff actually helps you to understand the banking system, how it works, how it was developed, and how you can use it for your benefit. Again, we want you to become self-reliant. So the newest thing for our brand, Debt-Free Millionaire, is that we are actually bringing on new influencers and also possibly celebrity people to endorse us, so celebrity endorsements. So stay tuned for that. Basically, what happened was in one of our board meetings, one of our board members actually said, hey, what if we could bring on so-and-so to endorse this product? I said, that'd be great. It's like, well, it's going to cost you, full transparency. It's going to cost you. There's going to be some business expense, and then anything that we raised is a little bit's going to go back to, say, their nonprofit of choice. And I said, hey, you know what? I'd love to be able to give out to a nonprofit. So a lot of these influencers, a lot of these celebrity endorsers are actually looking into our group. Not just Debt-Free Millionaire, but actually over Zogos, and more importantly, actually over a game that we call Panic Attack. Now, Panic Attack is a game that basically helps you to manage your emotions and social aspects. Basically, have you ever heard of Among Us? If you've heard of Among Us, you know that there are these space-suited figures running through these different scenarios, trying to fix certain things. And we are actually using the same kind of idea to create a game based on mental health and wellness. But the thing is, it's not a game where you're going to say, okay, I learned about mental health and fall asleep. This is a game where you're actually have a lot of fun, but by playing it, you're actually going to learn a little bit each time you play it. Things like coping with emotional stress or managing your health and wellness. So these are small things that we're going to give you while you're playing a really fun game. So this is going to be really exciting. And so we have actually some celebrities that want to endorse us and want to jump on to help us because they believe in the mission. And so that game is actually going out to help out kids with autism, as well as kids that have social emotional concerns. And you know what? Anybody that wants to just have a fun time playing a game, or maybe they're going to have a bad day and want to learn some things, this will teach you. And this will be a great way of doing it. So we're actually planning to bring on, sorry, my throat is still going out. But we're going to be bringing on celebrities and other influencers to talk about Debt-Free Millionaire. Right now we have Blockchain Monkeys. They are actually doing, they just interviewed me yesterday and are going to be putting out a video on this. I have a few other people that are putting videos together for Debt-Free Millionaire. And every time I get interviewed, there's a little bit more that comes out. So I'm really excited to get this out. I really want you to be able to understand what's going on and how to, again, be self-reliant and not be reliant on the government or a bank or any other institution, but reliant on yourself. This creates empowerment. You are the powerful, not the the banks or the businesses over top of you. You are, as long as you have self-reliance. But the problem is that most people don't have self-reliance and they rely on all these other groups to provide for them. They even become entitled that, say, that the US government owes them something. Well, the truth is that no one owes you anything. Nobody owes anyone anything because we are all on a, what we try to be, self-level level playing field. And those that are not on a level playing field, that's what things like Zogos Gaming is here to do. We are going to make sure that you are on a level playing field. No one has a has the ability to overcome anyone. Doesn't matter what your demographics are. Does not matter what your background is. Everyone has the ability to succeed. And this is why this project is so important. Debt-Free Millionaire is just one of the projects attached to Zogos Gaming, because Zogos creates empowerment for the youth, for the teachers, for the parents, for everyone. That's why it's so great. And we'll give you more about that and everything else that we're doing later on. Thank you for joining me for this Debt-Free Millionaire class, course, podcast. And we hope to make you a debt-free millionaire zealot. Until next time, thanks so much. Take care. Bye-bye.